Welcome to the first of this week's forums. My name is Mark Schwain. I'm the village philosopher. I've met a number of you informally or at one of the orientation sessions. But one of my principal jobs is to moderate evening forums. Forums at Holden, as you heard Larry Rasmussen explain in the announcements at dinner, are times when we dispute, argue, explore together some rather controversial and we hope interesting topics. This week, we really have a lineup of three discussions and then a film. And I suppose if the three discussions have something in common, they will all more or less be an exploration of the relationship between the Christian faith on the one hand and all sorts of economic or political or social aspects of our lives on the other, and the interaction between them and the implications of the Christian faith for our activities in those other orders, if you can carve up reality like that, which you can't really very well, but we're going to for the purposes of some of these discussions. Tonight, the topic is formulated in the faith in the form of a provocative question, which you heard announced and saw posted on the bulletin board. Can there be a Christian capitalist? What I've asked a couple of our new staff members, new this week that is, to do, who you see sitting up here before me, Paul and Betty Picard, is to start us off, that is to start the discussion by taking positions on the issue that are pro and con. They're going to make short, provocative statements that will sort of sharpen and clarify what's really at issue. And what they say here will be simply to get us started and may or may not accord with their own personal views. They've simply agreed to start us off with a sharp position. No, there can't be a Christian capitalist, and then yes, there can be a Christian capitalist. They were introduced to you at dinner briefly by Larry Rasmussen, and some of you met them at the 7 o'clock session. I'll just say that they both currently teach at Florida State University in Tallahassee. Paul teaches government there. He's a professor of government, and Betty is a professor of social work. Without any further ado, then, I'll turn it over briefly to Betty, who will answer the question, can there be a Christian capitalist? No, there cannot be.
No, there cannot be. That is assuming that Christian means Christ follower. That's the definition I'm using. Christ said, sell all your belongings, I'm quoting from yesterday's gospel, and give the money to the poor. Provide for yourselves purses that do not wear out and save the money in heaven. But let me just read you what I think the Lord's Prayer would sound like according to the creed of capitalism. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come with its life of ease and luxury. Thy will be done according to our standards. Give us this day our daily bread, our stocks and bonds, and savings sufficient for our retirement in wealth. Forgive us our trespasses, for they have been minor, and we had good intentions. But forget not the transgressions of the welfare chiselers. And as the psalmist says, keep coals of fire on the heads of our adversaries, and spare us from temptation by gratifying our desires, and deliver us from poverty. Amen. That is not the Lord's Prayer. The early Christians had a very different view of Christianity. They were, in the best sense of the word, communists. They lived communally. They shared. They did not own things. They believed all the things that Christ had said. Even the later Christians had ideas which had very little to do with accruing treasures on earth. The early fathers, Jerome, Augustine, some of the others, went off into the desert and lived on honey and snakes or whatever. Anyway, it just doesn't sound like they were much interested in accruing wealth. Then even the institutional church, which is one of the big landholders of all time, even in that church, the most honored of its members have not been the big wheels in the hierarchy. They've been the poorest and the humblest, the great saints. Yesterday we saw the film about Dom Helder, Mother Therese, Cesar Chavez, Dorothy Day, all of them, great, great Christians. None of them capitalists. If capitalism is getting and having capital over and above our needs, that's the complete antithesis of Christianity. Christianity does not recommend or urge or even support accruing goods beyond what we need. And when we talk about modern capitalism, we're not even talking about goods. We're talking about papers. We're talking about stocks, bonds, deeds, certificates, which have nothing to do with production, have nothing to do with earning, and it's quite beyond the realm of Christianity. That's what I think.
Thank you, Betty. And now, Paul.
If you'll hand me my notes, I'll tell you what I think. I'm glad some of you heard me earlier today, and those of you who see the contrast, well, I just want to say the 7 o'clock was the real me. My text is taken from the epistle to the Galatians. I just pronounced it, didn't I? Anyway, see Paul writes, I want to see profit added to your account. I want to defend Christianity and capitalism on three levels. First, the individual level, second, the community level, and third, the international level. At the individual level, capitalism is essential for individual freedom, individual choice. Without capitalism, the individual has the choices made by somebody else. And this urge that we have to make our own choices, to be capitalist, is very strong in us. I was walking in the streets of Leningrad one day, and a young Soviet businessman came up to me with a business proposition on the street. This was a young man trying to be a capitalist after more than a half century of communist rule outlawing capitalism. So if we were to prohibit capitalism and say Christianity doesn't have it, it has to be an active force constraining people, denying people this expression of their own inner urgings, so that capitalism and all the trappings of acquisition and private property, et cetera, that go with it are essential part of the Christian doctrine of individual freedom and responsibility. At the community level, defend Christianity and capitalism because capitalism has been the generator for all our social and economic progress. It has freed up the community to develop its Christian mission, and has provided the wealth with which Christian work can be done. And this is best exemplified by all the great charitable work of the many capitalists in our society, whether one thinks of the great capitalists who have done great works of charity, like the Carnegie Libraries and so forth, or whether one thinks of it at a more modest level. And thirdly, Christian can be a capitalist in international relations today because capitalism stands as the only bulwark against atheistic, materialistic communism, which threatens to take over the entire world. So that the defense of American capitalism, God is a defense of God and chosen mechanism of protecting us against the atheist communists.
Is that it?
You want more?
No, fine. I just didn't know. Thank you very much, both of you. I can see that they are Holden's answer to Sean Alexander and James Kirkpatrick. Okay, so now I put it to you to continue and answer the question in your own way. Explore it together. Can there be a Christian capital?
Our churches don't run on angel dust. I mean, oh, that's the wrong term to use. Churches don't run on nothing. And I guess we're all capitalists. We all share our means in our parishes.
Your statement.
Does that make us non-Christians because we're...
Your statement assumes that the church will not survive if it's not capitalistic.
Well, I don't know if that's what I mean.
The early property. Church had all things in common. Yeah. People sold and gave as there was need. Not exactly the ideal capitalistic situation, but they had more. And
there was an exchange of money someplace along the line.
Oh, sure.
There were wealthy supporters of the early church, too. Joseph of Arimathea, who furnished the tomb for Christ to be buried in, he was a wealthy man.
What was the father of the prodigal son? Yeah.
Job was a wealthy man before he went through all the trials, and after he had gone through all the trials, much more was restored to him. So
Job
I believe...
was not a Christian.
But it is in the Bible, and it is in the Old Testament, and the Old Testament is the basis for the New Testament. Because Christ said, the law and the prophets stand, and it will be fulfilled to the last dot on the I.
The description in Acts 2 about the communism in the early church is not an endorsement of communism. It does not say in that passage that this is the way it must be or even this is the way it should be. The Bible does not endorse any economic system as far as I can recall or condemn any economic system. The Bible's not about economics.
Well, Christ said give the Caesar what belongs to Caesar, so it says you pay taxes.
That's right. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, just a couple chapters after that one, notwithstanding the severe punishment which is given to Ananias on a totally separate ground, Peter does tell Ananias that his property is his to have until he decides freely to give it up.
Mm-hmm. Stewardship.
Churches have somewhat instead of the Catholic Church before the Reformation. I don't need to elaborate in this group on what it was like. It was like an old shoe that it held together fairly well. It had many defects, but it sure did conform to human nature, nudging it towards a sense of sin, but conforming mainly to human nature, the desire to own, the desire to enjoy the body, and the desire for many other things. So like an old shoe, human beings had worn that for 1,500 years until Luther and the Reformers came along. And then Reinhold Niebuhr, that influenced me and Jimmy Carter along the way, said that, reviewed a book a long time ago that I recommend that all of you read. I only know it from Niebuhr's review, called The Almost Chosen Nation, and Abraham Lincoln as a sort of a continuation of the Old Testament prophet. What Niebuhr said in essence is that this country wants an idealist, but not too good. It wants a practical politician, but not too cynical. And that Abraham Lincoln is the best amalgam of the man who is good, but not too good, a clever user of power, but not too clever by half. And people want their pastors and their churches to be like Lincoln, good, but not too good, idealistic, but don't be pushy. Make deals to keep the church heated, and to keep missionaries afield, but but make the ordinary compromises so that you wear the church like you wear an old shoe, where it conforms to human nature and lets you love your warm body, but not too much. Love food, but not too much. Love your private property, but have a little caution about how much you are love it. So our great leaders in both church and state are, as Niebuhr says, good but not too good, cynical but not too cynical, practical, oh yes, all the time.
Now, is that a description or a prescription?
That's so much the way it is that I hardly want to shake the thing.
So your answer to the question, can there be a Christian capitalist, is yes, because that's sort of the way things...
Yeah, the church is an old shoe, and capitalism is an old shoe, and they work together. They're neither left nor right. Paul Douglas says that the great advantage of the established church is that it has inoculated people against the real thing.
Okay, yes, respond to that.
I think one of the major goals of capitalism, if not the major goal of capitalism, is to make a profit. And in making a profit really depends on having cheap labor and cheap raw materials. I think in the history of, say, for example, America or Western civilization, that has meant exploiting the cheap labor and raw material of lesser developed countries. For our advantage, we are able to make a profit, or we are able to make our living by exploiting other people. I don't know that that fits in with the way the Christian should view the world. That there cannot be a Christian capital.
I wouldn't agree that capitalism depends basically and fundamentally upon exploitation. I might agree that getting rich within the system.
Thinking of another thought too. We talk about tithing 10%. We're going to do the other 90%. If God heaps abundance on us, I think maybe he intends for that to grow.
What about the parable of the talents? That showed growth, and he who saw to it that his talents multiplied, he was rewarded more. And that is New Testament.
Do you suppose that parable is misused and we look at it in terms of profit instead of looking at it in terms of whether or not the talents were used for the purpose for which they were given? Money is given for a purpose. Other talents are given for other purposes. Money is not necessarily given to make more money. Money is also given, didn't Jesus say that to at least some people, that they should sell all of their goods and follow him?
That's because their heart was where that treasure was.
Yes, that's correct.
Is that so doesn't it depend on motivation time? Then?
I'm sorry, I did not hear her.
She said, doesn't it depend on motivation then? Isn't that correct? Doesn't it depend on motivation? Yes, sir.
I wonder if we could maybe discuss what we're all meaning by capitalism. Maybe we're all the different ideas might be talking about completely different concepts of what capitalism is. I don't propose to have a definition, but I'd like to hear some of the other people.
Yeah, if you're a homeowner, are you a capitalist?
Or what?
You know, I was wondering about the definition myself of capitalism.
I would say, let me just stipulate that capitalism would be participation in an economic system whereby the measure of success in that system is the maximization of profit and the minimization of loss. And that increasing measures of success depend upon accumulation of private property or capital in other forms, basically. That would be kind of a starting definition. Capitalism, the accumulation of capital, which is then reinvested for economic activity, the norm of which is, and the standard measure of success within that economic order is, if you're a good capitalist, maximizing profit and minimizing loss.
Yeah.
I'll just stipulate that as a kind
of working. Doesn't it confuse the issue to talk at the same time about both the economic system and about a certain philosophical matrix which is often attached to it but doesn't have to be? Which is the idea that each individual must act so as to maximize profit and get as rich as possible. And many people who live within our capitalist society don't think that way.
They're not capitalists.
Well, they don't have that philosophical construct, but they are still capitalists because they buy and sell.
Then you're modifying his definition.
I sure am.
Okay, well, I'm willing to have it modified if you want to. Yes, Larry, go ahead.
No, I think there's a proper modification. What it seems to me what distinguishes capitalism is one, private rather than public ownership.
Yeah.
As a predominant mode of ownership. That may take the form of huge corporations owning, but it's by way of stocks and bonds, as well as other forms of participation by individuals in ownership. And then, secondly, the market system. That is, you've converted most everything into terms which can be bought and sold. And that market system is characteristic. Mm-hmm. Of capitalism, and that includes labor and skills and ideas and information are bought and sold, as well as goods. Services are also bought and sold. And the third characteristic seems to me to be, at least, it doesn't distinguish capitalism from socialism, but it is an industrial order, by and large. At least modern capitalism is, and we don't. So one doesn't talk about capitalism prior to the 16th and 17th centuries. So I think that characteristic of industrialization, market system, and private ownership as a primary mode would distinguish it from socialism. It isn't simply accumulating capital and reinvesting, because that happens in the socialist order as well, but by way of an agent.
Private property.
And public, there, in that case.
Yeah.
Or is it simply getting rich? There have been poor capitalist orders.
No, it's not getting rich. That's the reason I think that to cite instances of rich persons who may not have been capitalists is to kind of cloud the issue.
Yeah.
Mark?
Yes.
Larry's written all, if you didn't follow what he just said, he's written all it down in a very neat little pamphlet, which you can read in the library as soon as I return it.
Okay, well, let's then accept that as a kind of working definition of capitalism. And
Mark,
instead
can
of
I just tell an amusing little story which has more advanced the discussion one iota, but it's kind of fun. I was with a group of students on an interim in January 1 year on Christian Marxist dialogue, and we spent most of the month in the German Democratic Republic, East Germany. And the students were very interested in the whole capitalism-socialism question and on how Christians in East Germany viewed it. And we went to meet with a group of Christians in East Germany, and the question was posed by one of our group to these people: how can you be Christian? How is it that you can find Christianity compatible with socialism? And that group of Christians from East Germany just burst out in laughter, not to ridicule, they just laughed. And they said, the question that we decided to ask you when you came today was, how is it that Christianity could possibly be compatible with capitalism?
Larry, do you know the old Russian quip that's about 40 years old now, where the communist says, capitalism is man's exploitation of man,
yeah.
and the capitalist says yes, and communism is the reverse.
Right.
Okay, gentlemen, if we can accept these sort of descriptive aspects of capitalism as a kind of cluster that we can kind of use as a working definition, let's proceed then to re-ask the question of, can a Christian be a capitalist? And there was a gentleman back there with with a hat on there. Didn't you have your hand up before?
Yeah, it was quite a while ago. I think I can remember what I was going to say. I think it was something about Adam Smith was the first capitalist thinker. He was the first economist. And what you said about reinvestment, I think, should be emphasized, despite what this gentleman over here just said. His idea was that everybody would be primarily concerned, excuse me, not just with profits, but in a competitive market system, which is what he mentioned, production would be the key factor. And you mentioned reinvestment. And someone else mentioned a little while ago something about stewardship. And just for kicks, if you introduce the idea into the capitalist system that production should be the key factor, the producing of goods or services with the profits that you make, then it seems to me that Christianity and capitalism can somehow be correlated. Now, it might not be, but it can be. And I'm not a capitalist. I mean, I'm not an advocate of the kind of capitalism that we have now. Because it's a far cry from
Christianity. I think it's very obvious to a historian that it's the Protestant countries that have made good economies. For what reasons, there's 100,000 of them given. But just as the Roman Catholic countries, I don't want to offend any Roman Catholic brethren here, but they don't make very good democracies.
Venice did all
that. Because of their religious, authoritarian setup, they're not used to how you can give and take, vote on an issue, and this and that and the other thing. I think it's not Adam Smith that... I'm sure, you know, he was the original guy, but some people would blame Calvin for capitalism. Some would take credit for that. Some would blame it, whether you're pro or con. In fact, one guy, and this is what I'd like to throw out, said that because the Huguenots were slaughtered and killed in France, they suffered economically. And is it good to suffer economically? Is it good that the Catholics killed the Protestants in France, therefore did not do as well? And what is the alternative to that? That's what, whether it's capitalism or otherwise, I'm interested in how does the Christian become productive, both as a person and as a worker? We don't really have much choice but to work. And then the question is it okay to accumulate, whether you accumulate stacks of alfalfa or $10 bills in the bank, I don't think it makes any difference. Is it legitimate to accumulate, to a certain extent, things to exchange?
So your
capitalism is loaded with, I mean, then you get into the Marxist reply about exploitation and all the, you know, the fire words that really reduce the conversation to name-calling, I'm afraid, usually with a guy like me, anyway. And I'm in farming right now, and it raises the question very severely. Because you don't, and my background is a bureaucracy, where you're in a never-never land. You're neither a capitalist nor a communist. You're just sort of in a labyrinth of something, of paperwork, okay? And when you're farming, you're either a capitalist in the sense that you take an aggressive, thoughtful view of what you've got, or you go under. You just don't survive. And, you know, and I think it's been kind of a revelation for me. There is no choice but to take an aggressive, which I think many people, Christians, say is very bad. In a sense, there's an implication to take an aggressive, whether it's thoughtful or otherwise, view of land. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see any alternative. That's my problem.
Isn't the fact that you could say you would go under if you were to get into any other type of production system than capitalist, the fact that there aren't support systems or support structures or mechanisms existing within this particular society to support a non-capitalist farmer? If you were to get into a cooperative effort with farmers in your community, you may be able to successfully raise your production and maintain a standard of living that you like. My problem is here, we keep taking economics out of a system that, you know, evolves lots of things in a society. I think that's the problem we keep running into here. I mean, trying to...
I don't think we're going out in the wrong direction. I think it doesn't make any difference whether you're a communist, you know,
a capitalist doesn't make you a Christian or a communist makes you a Christian. It's what you do in either political system. Jesus dealt with people who were slaves, and Paul dealt with them as slaves. He didn't say you shouldn't have slaves or should you not become a slave, but said that you should, you know, follow Christ in order to be either a slave or a free. And to that extent, he gave the strength, you know, it's one's personal relations to Jesus that gives you strength to either be a Christian capitalist or a Christian communist or a Christian socialist. I don't think you're going to find either one or the other being wrong or right in that regard.
The Christian statement that I certainly admire and don't live up to is Simon Weil, this Jewish fellow traveler of Christianity to the very end, where she says it is better to fail than to succeed in doing evil. One quick note back to the parables of Christ. C.H. Dodd, that influenced me a lot on this, the Scottish historian who died recently, said, what was Christ's business experience? He says, I think from my long study, said Dodd, that he was a small-time contractor and capitalist, not just a guy wanting to have one hammer and two nails. He used the imagery of a small-time contractor who understood foundations and don't build on sand. He understood the principle, not as absolutely poverty-stricken place, but a certain margin of level. But I don't think Christ's parables are to be used to nurture capitalism. Christ was more... I think Simone Weil had the sense of Christ. It's better to fail in this world than to succeed in doing evil. But my imagery of the old shoe, you know that routine Protestants and Catholics have fought with ordinary weapons, but we're all fighting with nuclear weapons now. And it is absolutely shocking that we're all so relaxed, whether Reagan or Carter or me or you, with the immense new weapons. So we are... The old shoe image that I use is so too easygoing in a world of nuclear weapons. And back to my point, though, I don't think the parables of Christ should be used very quickly to nurture capitalism, although they use capitalistic imagery of investment and practicality and firm foundations. He was using them for another kingdom, as all of you know perhaps better than I. So therefore, capitalists, for understandable reasons, use Christ's parables to nurture capitalism endlessly. But they don't use that other side. One test in this world is that by ordinary worldly standards, you are a failure and you are an outcast. And no one likes to fail or be an outcast or be a leper or walk in two here saying, tinkle, tinkle, unclean. It is really just too horrible for us to comprehend. But to some extent, I think that is in Christ's message.
Seems like we're saying that to make a profit is evil for a businessman to want to make a profit.
It's not making the profits, it's the manner in which you go about doing that.
Yeah, but that's outside of the capitalist or socialist realm completely. I mean, whatever a person is doing, I mean, he's doing it to earn a living for his family, whether he's... No matter what type of work he's doing, he's not doing it to lose money.
I think it's a little bit of it has to do with the basic philosophies behind socialism and capitalism. Socialism, everybody's kind of equal and everybody's kind of giving to each other. Whereas with capitalism, I think if you tried to think of it, it might be greed. And that's dangerous. So if you could have capitalism without greed,
are you trying to say that communists and socialists are not greedy?
The system isn't set up.
That they don't take advantage?
The system is one of sharing, though. Whereas our system is one of having, you know, personal possession.
There's plenty of wealthy people out here in the socialists, the higher up.
Well, without getting into the socialism contrast, supposing it's true that what just this gentleman says, that... The sort of character profiles that fuel capitalist order have to do basically with selfishness and greed. And that these, in the words of Adam Smith, private vices become mysteriously public virtues. That is, by everybody maximizing their own gain, being selfish, letting the market dictate the prices, trying to maximize their own position in the market. This kind of redounds to the overall public benefit, but through a series of private acts that, that kind of can be described along this line. If that's true, that then can one be, I guess get back to your question, can one be a follower of the way or a follower of Jesus, Christian, and engage in that kind of activity?
I think that's too easy to talk about selfishness and greed. I think I would say an answer to that is, what's the matter with selfishness and greed? But
why did the Jews want to leave Egypt? That's what I was going to say. Was that a
It's easy when someone is trying to maximize their profits to blame it on the selfishness and greed. And there are a lot of things that, that cause each of us to do what we do that has nothing to do with selfishness and greed. Our ambitions come from many different sources. And generally, if you do not have, you generally see those that have something of selfishness and greed. And we don't account for the tremendous amount of individualism of each one of these people, that they're not a group, they're not this class or something of that nature. They're each individuals like all of us. And each of them have a different reason for maximizing their profits. Some people can maximize their profits. They can't help themselves. They've got a fantastic talent for making money. And it just comes hand over fist. They're not greedy. They're just doing what they want to do. Like I like to work with my hands. I'm doing what I want to do. They're doing what they want to do. And I say, more power to you. If you got $30,000 million, that's great by me, because you really like what you're doing. You're earning it. But you're not selfish and greedy. Selfish and greed must come into a different category. It can't come into a category of your livelihood and making maximum profit. Selfish and greed has to come into a category of your use of that profits and how you deal with it, how you deal with your fellow man. That's another personal thing. That I can be a pauper and be very selfish and greedy. I mean, if I'm living amongst a lot of poor people and I got a little bit of food and they don't have any, I'm going to hoard this stuff, then I might be selfish and greedy if I don't share or something of that nature.
I'd like to.
We've got a lot to look at here.
Okay, just a second. Wait, hold it. There are a lot of people who haven't spoken yet who have their hands up, so let me call on them in order of the hands I saw. Martin, and then this gentleman.
The situation that might catalyze the discussion around a specific test would be to ask yourself what your thoughts were the last time your pastor asked for a raise, and whether or not there wasn't, at least for a moment, a point when you said to yourself, if only yourself, well, I thought he was a follower of Christ. What does he want more money for? Didn't Christ, you know, aren't these pastors supposed to live beyond money? And if that's true, is that then a critique of our acquisitiveness in Christian terms or not?
Yes, sir.
I don't know what a capitalist society in its purest form would be. The only one I know about, or the one I know best about, is ours. And when I look at the history of our country, the importation of slaves, the stealing of land, or quote-unquote stealing of land under the free enterprise system, manifest destiny. Wars, economic wars, we don't want to lose our investments. When I look at our country today, and I see how we're getting in an economic turmoil because we are losing investments from people who are simply saying, hey, that's ours. It's not yours, it's ours. I look at our future and I wonder where we're heading. But it looks like this system, if we want to call it capitalism, is awfully exploited. We've been exploiting people all along. And I don't think that's my idea of what a good Christian is. Isn't somebody who exploits other people, especially on the grand scale that we are doing so in this country today. I would say that they're... in practical terms, philosophical terms, I don't know. But the way we are capitalists, I don't believe that that's Christian.
Could you be more specific on the exploitation we're exploiting?
Nestle, overseas, for one instance, with their sale of baby food products, which are banned in this country and are sold overseas.
Is that the capitalist system, or is that the action of individuals? Is that the actions of Christians or non-Christians, whatever have you? But I think that's jumping into a putting everything in a bag, too.
Okay, now, there are a number of people who want to talk, so the rule will now be you can talk as long as you have the floor, unless there's another hand up, in which case I let you know you have 30 seconds, and then we call somebody else. So Judy first, and then there's two others I'll tell you who want to talk, so keep it within 45 seconds.
I have trouble separating the individual from the larger piece. You may like to work with your hands, and someone else may be good at making money, but if you take my tree to carve your wood, I might have some trouble with that because it is affecting me. Your decision to work with your hands will affect me. I just can't get away from the fact that what I choose to do does, in fact, affect other people. And if I'm very good at making money, at whose expense, I have to ask myself, am I doing that at someone else's expense? And if so, then that may be a conflict of two interests or values that I have. One may be a spiritual value and the other may be an economic one.
Okay, back in the blue sweatshirt there.
I wish I could express myself better, but number one, what other country in this whole world is better than our country?
Is what?
It's a better country than our country, and it has more Christianity, and doesn't do the same thing.
Well, there are 10 others who think they're better. You know, you can talk to other people from other countries and think they're better.
Well, we can check the record.
Have they lived here?
Yeah, I'm saying that. I mean, that's not. We think we're better, but that doesn't.
Yes, back in the, had you said all you wanted to say with that question?
I guess so, except that I think that we have the opportunity in this country, and we haven't probably done the best that we could with it, but we have the opportunity to do it, to be a Christian nation.
Yes.
I wonder if the problem isn't that we're confusing our religious system with our economic system, and thinking that our economic system has provided us with our religious system, when in fact it's the other way around. I encounter numbers of people who seem to think that when I tinker somehow with the economic system, that I'm threatening their religious existence. And I find this kind of problem hard to deal with. I seem to be able to separate them. I don't see any reason why capitalism must insist as its first principle always the profit. I don't understand why that has to be the only way we can run a capitalistic system. Our economy in the United States is a mixed economy right now. We have cooperatives, we have private enterprise, small-time entrepreneurs, and we have monopolies. And it all functions, and in my opinion, a little bit better sometimes, a little bit worse others. We don't have one system in this country.
Yes, sir.
Well, not to make it worse than it is already, but the other thing that occurs to me, for those who attended the 7 o'clock on the American Creed, now that, it seemed to me there we were talking about essentially a political system, and now we've got an economic system, and then we're talking also about our religion. Now, I think it might be interesting to see how does the American Creed, the political system, feed into both. How is it related to our Christian religion, and how then are they all related, all three of them? That might complicate things, but I think you can't really talk about our country and say it is capitalistic and exploitative and forget about the creed, the American Creed, which the professor here reviewed for us earlier. He might want to pursue that, he might not.
Yes, sir.
I think we ought to examine how Christians have fared in the socialist countries.
You're asking how their Christian faith has fared?
No, how they've been able to flourish in socialist countries, the Christianity.
Do you mean Marxist socialist countries?
Do you mean well, East Germany, for example?
Well, I think example of maybe communist China and socialist Russia.
Yes,
Larry. What about socialist Sweden?
It's not doing well, I understand.
Okay, Larry, go ahead.
It might be helpful, since our propensity is always to link capitalism with democracy.
to say that those two don't have to go together, and often have not, and today do not in many countries. That is the remark that was made, that there is a semi-independence of the political from the economic system, is a valid one. And capitalism is not inherently a system that promotes political democracy. Now, it has in many nations, and ours happened to be one of them where those streams do come together. But there are military dictatorships that are capitalist economically. So I think it's just important to see that. That is not a marriage, even though it can be. What distinguishes capitalism, one place where I feel real rub with Christian faith, is that, to quote Adam Smith, the assumption is that that which is in individuals' own self-interest will in the aggregate redound to the common good. Mm-hmm. Each individual doing what he or she regards as in his own self-interest will do that which serves the common good. Now, I both challenge the notion of individual orientation in our decision-making as not being compatible with Christianity, and the outcome, whether that does in fact redound to the common good. It just horrified me when I read about what the Japanese whaling industry was up to when they were told that if they continue killing the whales at the rate they are now, that the whales will be extinct and therefore they wouldn't have their livelihood anymore. And the response was, for a while we'll be able to kill the whales. And then too many of them will be gone, and then we'll shift elsewhere to maximize our profits. That was a diversification program. And the problem was maximizing profits. Whether the whales lived or died wasn't the point. When they were gone, we moved somewhere else. That was already in the plan. And that is not serving the common good by making individually self-interested decisions.
Someone over here, this gentleman, made some, good remarks on the sins of capitalistic America. But the difficult, and I think that's fairly, that is one of the guilt trips I feel that Marxists run on us as well as others. My problem with that is, and this is, I'm taking this from Leslie Newbegin's book, it's not my idea, is that we can all do that. I don't think that solves to say, as you have, that Christianity rubs against capitalism doesn't solve for us the problem of Christianity and capitalism. Christianity rubs against the Old Testament, you know, a la Paul, the law, okay? That does not solve the problem. The Christian faith rubs against just about everything. Myself, number one. And I'm not going to commit suicide because of that yet. So I see a lot of Christian thinkers in this country and elsewhere sort of with, they can't stand Russia, they can't stand us, but they don't know where else to go with sort of a pure Christian faith. I don't think there is such a thing, and I no longer feel guilty because of it. Now, I don't like the guys, like some farmers in my area, who don't have the slightest idea that the Mexicans have made them rich. I mean, they won't, you know, the Mexicans, who in the hell are they? They're the guys that picked all the lettuce. You know, and they don't have the slightest idea that they're going to have to treat them right or they're going to go under. Now, I don't like that kind of a guy. And I know that they justify their position, and they can in this economic system, and they can't, it's legal. But they're going to think, in fact, they are. But the trouble is, then the opposite comes into play, which I also have trouble. The workers who don't want to pay the bills, don't have the headaches of the guy who deals with the whole farm, and they want $300 an hour. And it won't work.
And that's the difficulty. The worker bees and the other guys, and how to get them together is the one that baffles me.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I wonder, again, this point, I think it's true that the Mexicans made those farmers rich, and it's also true that the Mexicans allowed us to buy the lettuce for a very low price so that we could save the money to buy the things that we wanted. So we've all benefited from that, from the system. You can't just pull yourself back from it to know it's dirty, because we're sitting in the middle of it, and everybody here benefited from it at some time, I think.
That's the problem. Yes, sir.
Jesus, on the night before he died on the cross, was with his disciples, and he was a man who was facing sure death. He knew that because the political situation rested him. And then he was able to tell his disciples, be of good cheer. In this world, he shall tribulation, but be of good cheer, I've overcome this world. He was talking about a peace that comes not from this world, but from an inner peace that comes from relationship, I believe, with Jesus Christ. And that gives me strength to be a Christian communist or a Christian Catholic as such. And it gives me strength to, and day by day as I carry out my job, be able to say, yeah, Lord, this is what you've led me to do, and this is what I shall do today. It leaves me when I get my paycheck and I return to the Lord of my offerings and to my pastors, because I'm underpaid as it is. and I think that, you know, we're trying to tag a Christian label on an economic political system. We'll never solve that problem.
Yes, sir.
I have a friend who is down on everything. I heard little pieces of his argument tonight. That he's disgusted with the political system and doesn't want anything to do with that. It's all bad. And he's disgusted with the churches because he sees all this stuff going on that he doesn't agree with, and that's all bad. And he's disgusted with school, and they're not doing their job. And he thought he would go into business and in the computer business, and he found out that was all bad too, and he's just almost ready to fold up. And I think God meant for us to look where we are and do what we can. And if you take it to extremes like he does, it really is kind of sad.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting if you look at the standard of living that the United States has now. Our standard is just on a higher plane than most people. We're becoming to realize that the resources that maintain the standard of living right now are limited. And I see a conflict coming. If capitalism is increasing profits, they're working toward a higher profit, is that you're going to get to a point where everybody is going to be working for those same resources. And it gets to a point where you're going to have to sit back and say, hey, you know, it almost gets to the point where that becomes greediness, because there is not enough to go around. I think you're going to have to resolve that in your own mind, is where is greed? Where do you draw the line of greed in your own life? And I think that's the only thing, you know, how we view that is important. And I think that Christianity can throttle that. Okay. And if we abandon Christianity with the teachings of the Bible and whatever, things like that, I think we're in trouble. I think we're looking for that.
Okay, before I call on some of the people down here, have I missed any folks up here who had their hands up? Sometimes it's hard for me to see in the dark here. Okay, nobody? Then, Martin.
One place where it seems to me that the two rub against one another is in the area of people over things. And that is particularly a problem for us in America, because we are the country outside of some very oppressive regimes that put more people in jail for longer than any other country in the world. And what we do to about 80% of people who are in jail is sacrifice their lives for a certain period of time to protect our property. The 80% I'm talking about are people who've committed crimes against property, not crimes against people. 80% of the people in jail are there because they've stolen something or deprived us of some aspect of our property. And I wonder whether we can say that it's consistent with the tradition of Jesus to trade people's freedom rather than working towards their wholeness in exchange for our property. The fact of the matter is that if you steal two color television sets in Washington, that's going to get you 3 years in prison. And I guess I don't think Jesus would think that much of a trade. And that has to do, I think, with our what an outcome of capitalism, which is that our things become more important than the people.
Well, I just pick up on this gentleman's thought here that it would be interesting to consider coming at it from another direction. The difference in an atheistic capitalist and a whatever other kind of capitalist, maybe other religions you could think of, an atheistic capitalist, an agnostic capitalist, a Christian capitalist, a Muslim capitalist. And I think if you think of that, you think that the Christianity should affect the character and the quality of capitalism. If we accept your definition, then we have to say most of us here are enmeshed in the matrix of capitalism. But I don't think, and it's going to be pretty hard to abandon that once we decide to go to Russia or something strange happens in our country like a revolution. But I don't think we're going to abandon our Christianity because of that or feel like they can't be put together. So I think that the Christianity should control the capitalism.
Henry? I think that one of the things that we have to be concerned with is this balance. You know, we are not a pure capitalism. We will never have pure socialism. No country has ever had either. There's always going to be somewhat of a mixture of the two, and our response to that mixture is what is going to put us in the balance. We cannot deal with people as if they were things. We cannot deal with things as if they were people. It goes against the grain of a human being, of being human, to jail a person for stealing two TV sets for 3 years. By the same token, and in the same way, it is dehumanizing for the huge corporations to treat people the way they do, both within this country and most vividly because the laws of this country do not apply outside, what they do overseas. Individual capitalist, the small farmer who is in business for himself, store owner, operates on a completely, in many ways, a completely different level, seems to me, of capitalism than a large corporation. I use the word multinational, but I don't mean just that. As those of you who have worked in bureaucracies know, they have a life of their own, and an existence apart from the people who run them. And they are greedy. Institutions are, by their very nature, greedy. And acquisitive and exploitative, I'm afraid, including the institution of the church sometimes. And that is, I think, where our duty, our demands as Christians are placed upon us in that context.
Okay, we have time for, I think, one more comment, and then we'll have to...
I think the distinction between the person and his property is false, both biblically and in reality. The little old lady who's standing next to the bus stop with the last $20 in her purse, who was robbed by somebody, has a very difficult time distinguishing between that money that's going to buy her food and her person. That's an unbiblical, unrealistic, Marxist presupposition that doesn't work. And it doesn't work in the Marxist countries, and it doesn't work in this country, and it may be wrong, and if he stole two TV sets in California, that's where I worked in probation, he might get 15 minutes. And that's California's problem. I mean, you can't keep anybody in jail no matter what they do. And so they you know, if you don't learn to say yes and no to behavior, it continues, and that's the problem.
Okay, we're going to leave it, I think, with that last comment and lots of unresolved questions. The next question will be the next topic for a forum, and that is tomorrow night, in which I think some of the roots of the dilemmas that we've been probing will be, it seems to me, probed further tomorrow night. That question is, in part, a response to a Bible study that some of you didn't hear that was done last week on the theology of the cross. And so I've asked John Schramm, who's the director of the village and who led that Bible study, to come and sort of start us off on that question. That question is, can faithfulness be compromised?